Then Abigail made haste. I just read it for you in Luke chapter 13, but I'd have us go back there, Luke 13 and verse 24. Because this is a synonym that our Lord used to describe those that are entering in. How does it describe them? Well, in Luke 13 and verse 24, he says, strive to enter in at the straight gate. That word strive in the original, if you looked it up, it's the word to agonize. In other words, there is an effort that is put forth here, just like we're seeing of Abigail, to get to David. There is that alarm, that drive that pushes us to Christ. Now, I've heard messages where preachers try to work this up in people. That's not what it's talking about. The Lord is identifying or characterizing those that do enter in. They enter in agonizing. How many times have you seen a runner? I know some runners, they don't get their eye until they've done their 10 miles a day, you know. And I'm like, oh. But there's something that motivates them and drives them. But it's in them. It's a gift. I've got a friend that tells me that. I said, Ken, you've never experienced a high until you're about your 10th or 11th mile in. And I said, well, and I'll never experience it. I'll be dead. But it's an example of how unless the Lord gives you that desire, you never desire it. You might go out there and walk a few paces and think, okay, I'm tired, and go back. Now, this striving then is a gift of the Spirit. It's a sign of life. It's an evidence. When you study the history of the church even, and look at even from the beginning of the first century through the apostles, the heresies and the opposition and the persecutions that have been leveled against those who are the Lord's. And yet, as Christ said in Matthew 16, 18, I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The picture there is that the gates of hell that would otherwise keep souls within its grasp, those that are the Lord's that He has, that have been chosen by His grace from eternity and given to Christ, and Christ has paid their debt, the Lord's going to have each one. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The world won't. Satan won't. And here's the amazing thing. Not even the sin of those that He has redeemed will ever give God pause or cause Him to say, well, then I'm removing you. That's an amazing picture because it says, which cannot be removed, but abideth forever. All of that we see here in 1 Peter 2 and verse 13, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. There's things we may not like about the way things are, but there's an authority that the Lord has established for His glory and purpose, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors as unto them that are sent by Him for the punishment of evildoers. We certainly see that in this history. The Lord raising up one nation to go against Sodom and Gomorrah. He raised up the Chaldeans down in history to go against Israel. Habakkuk couldn't understand that. How can you, being holy, raise up an evil nation to bring them to chastise your people? Well, then he learned that the people were no better than the Babylonians. And that's what we have to see. Whatever the Lord brings, He's just in doing so. We have no goodness or righteousness in ourselves that we have to defend whatsoever. But he says here, and for the praise of them that do well, for so is the will of God that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God,
and honor the King. How that all works out, we need the Lord's wisdom. We need His direction. But He certainly instructed us in His Word to pray for those that are in authority over us.